You can talk about these, Amy. There are states who have trigger laws, i.e. a federal Roe fell, that their state law would automatically outlaw and criminalize abortion. There are people who are taking steps now to make sure that doesn't happen. But we did have a win, and that we need to be using it.
I am somebody. You may not respect me, but I am somebody. Every man is my brother. That's what we live by in Resurrection City.
KPFT's Community Advisory Board, also known as the CAB, is proud to announce the first town hall meeting for 2019 for listeners, programmers, and staff entitled Finding the Unity in Community Radio on Saturday, May 18th, 2019 at 9 a.m. on the Montrose Center, 409 Brainerd Street, Houston, Texas, 77006. The CAB is made up of representatives from the community who serve as an advisory council. By participating in the sharing of experiences and information, Houston's diverse communities come together to promote unity between programmers, listeners, and community-based organizations. This, in turn, increases community awareness, facilitating better programming, which positively impacts these diverse communities throughout the KPFT listening area. You, as a listener member of KPFT, are important to the strength of the station. Join us on Saturday, May 18th, 2019 at 9 a.m. The Montrose Center, 409 Brainerd Street, Houston, Texas, 77006. For more information, go to www.kpftcommunityadvisoryboard.org. You're listening to 90.1 KPFT.
And welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. It is another fundraising day, but we will try to make it a fundraising day. Just to start, you can call 713-526-5738, and you can then speak to some lovely people who will tell you how you can support KPFT and keep shows like ThinkWing Radio on the air. 713-526-5738. You can also go to kpft.org and click on donate, or you can text to 713-526-5738 and just put the word give in the body. So, what can we talk about? Well, about a week or so ago, there was an article in the Daily Mail, not generally one of my primary news sources, but it was kind of interesting. The headline is, "The Lords will have to reveal links to the Chinese and Russian firms in a crackdown on the tide of, quote, red money swirling through the British Parliament and the city." Security Minister Ben Wallace said a lack of complete transparency was a weak point at Westminster, that the peers, which is to say the Lords, do not have to declare how much money they earn from foreign activities. And Mr. Wallace said strong media helped protect the UK, but more work was needed. So, you know, there's an old saying, and there's discussion that no one actually said this, that it's sort of apocryphal. But there is a saying that when it comes time to hang the capitalists, they will compete to sell you the rope. And whether that's an actual quote or not, I do think it's a doctrine that that people will use when they are trying to undermine a society. They count on the capitalists essentially being greedy. Not all capitalists are greedy, but there is this greedy bunch of capitalists. In a reverse, Donald Trump now says that parents must vaccinate children in the face of the measles outbreak. He weighed in saying that the recent outbreak in the United States he's appearing to do an about face on his previous claims linking vaccines to autism. He told CNN's Joe Johns, when asked about what his message is for parents, quote, they have to get shots. The vaccinations are so important. This has really come around now. They have to get their shots. Massive combined inoculations to small children, he used to say, is the cause for a big increase in autism. Actually, that study was debunked years ago, and unfortunately, it's still having an amazing and ongoing knock-on effect. A few years ago, Trump met with Robert Kennedy Jr., who happens to be a vaccine skeptic, very disappointed in Robert Kennedy Jr., and Kennedy told reporters that Trump asked him to lead a commission on vaccination safety and scientific integrity. Now, it's really important to understand. Vaccinations, along with antibiotics, are the greatest medical advances in human history. Do you think that's an overstatement? Do you think that's hyperbole? Well, until people had antibiotics, an ear infection could kill you. A skin infection could kill you. A shaving infection could kill you. I know that when I was very young, I was born in 51, when I was very young, I was prone to ear infections. It was just the way my ear canal was built. And I was told a number of times growing up that if not for antibiotics, I probably would have gone deaf. Now, there may be people who would have been grateful for that, but, you know, I'm kind of happy I didn't go deaf. So, you know, vaccine skeptics, don't pay attention. Get your shots. It's not 100% safe, but it's so safe that the difference doesn't matter. They say that vaccines are 97% effective, meaning that maybe 3% of vaccinated people will get some very mild form of measles as opposed to some much more virulent form. But the herd immunity protects those who cannot get shots, whether it's very old people, very young people, people with sensitivities or allergies. By having about 95 or 93% of the population vaccinated, you protect the people who cannot be vaccinated, the too young, the too old, the too ill. So now they have measles in Alabama. They're saying that most adults born after 1957 don't need the vaccine booster. But if you got the vaccine around 1963, you might have only gotten one shot. You might need a booster shot. It might be worthwhile to talk to your doctor. Now, in my particular case, I actually back-to-back got measles, and then I got German measles. And I have to tell you, that was less than great fun. I was very, very sick. I'm amazed I wasn't in the hospital, but I was really sick for a couple of weeks. So I guess I don't need a booster shot because I've already got the disease. But, you know, vaccines. Get your vaccines. Now, there's another story about a Scientology ship in Curaçao that was quarantined because there was an infected crew member. And they did not want to bring measles into Curaçao where possibly other people who were vulnerable might catch the disease. Get your shots, people. Get your vaccinations, please. Do all of us a favor, including yourself, I might add. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We are doing fundraising, so if you would be so kind as to consider helping to support this tax-exempt 501c3 educational station that has over 100 different program titles on its HD1 FM and HD2 stations, all kinds of talk shows, music, things across the political spectrum, across the cultural spectrum, across the ethnic spectrum, across the musical spectrum. it's the station has an amazing variety of things to listen to. And we podcast. We have an archive at archive.kpft.org. And we also, many shows can be podcasted. My show, Think Wing Radio, can be podcasted. So if you happen to catch it once or twice and think it maybe is interesting, you can continue to listen or sample it by going to archive.kpft.org and looking up Think Wing Radio and getting a podcast of it. This is a story that I thought is interesting, especially since today I can talk about a couple of things at a little bit more length. The story is from Politico, and it's entitled "An Unexpected Current That's Remaking American Politics. New forms of electricity storage are making the grid more renewable and more reliable." And it starts off, and this is a little edited for space. Trump lied that the noise from wind turbines causes cancer, but his warning that home values instantly plunge 75% when a windmill is built nearby was equally false. He also claimed wind power is inordinately expensive, when in fact in much of America it's now the cheapest source of electricity. What is actually a serious challenge for the clean energy revolution? The intermittency of wind and solar. As more renewable power replaces Trump's preferred coal plants and more states aim to eliminate fossil fuels from their electric grids, utilities are grappling with how to make sure they can ensure uninterrupted service when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining. Another technology revolution is underway that could help solve that problem, an electricity storage boom. The cost of lithium-ion batteries has plunged 85% in a decade. I wish Apple knew that when I had to replace my battery. 85%, and 30% more in just the past year. So utilities across the U.S. have started attaching containers full of lithium-ion batteries to the grid, and they're planning to install more of them in the coming years. Electricity has always been the toughest commodity to manage because, unlike water or grain or fuel or steel, it has been largely impossible to store for later use. But that's changing fast, and even though the dramatic growth of batteries on the grid will be invisible to most Americans, it has the potential to transform how we produce and consume power, creating more flexible and resilient electricity systems with less waste, lower costs, and fewer emissions. You know, technologies don't advance in a vacuum. When RCA started building color TVs in the early 1950s, no one even had broadcast technology for color TV. But the very fact that NBC, which was owned by RCA, the very fact that NBC was broadcasting in color, and they did displays of color and black and white side by side. I remember when I was in New York, you would go to Rockefeller Center, to what was then the RCA building, and they had an area where you could go in front of a camera, and you could see yourself in black and white on a TV, and you could see yourself in color. I remember they once did a thing, I think it was on the Perry Como show, where the TV guide had an insert that you would fold out and put in front of your TV. And they had young women, dancers, that at a certain moment in the show, they would pose and just stay in place. And they, of course, were wearing colorful outfits. But you were watching in black and white. The insert was in color, and you put the insert up against the TV screen so you could see the difference between the monochrome image on your TV and what it would look like if you had a color TV. And color TVs didn't start to really saturate the market until about 1965-ish, because increasingly there were color broadcasts that you couldn't see, like The Wizard of Oz. There are people that never saw The Wizard of Oz in color until the mid-1960s or maybe the early 70s when they finally got a color TV set. So technologies sort of hopscotch on each other. You build a technology which creates an opportunity, and then another technology starts to develop, like color TVs to receive color signals. And then all of a sudden you have a new market, new opportunity, new jobs, new economic activity. You know, one of the differences between conservatives and liberals, when you want to sell an idea, you have to approach it differently with each group. liberals, in my opinion, will often want a policy or do a thing because it's the humane thing, it's the fair thing, it's the equitable thing, it's the right thing, it's the decent thing, it's the moral thing or the ethical thing. And I'm not saying none of this applies to conservatives, okay? However, when you want to make a case to conservatives, it's often about, will it harm them? Will it harm the economy? Will it harm their business? Will it create an economic opportunity? What is the upside potential financially? What is the tax incentive, perhaps? What are the costs? You know, one of the interesting arguments that has evolved over the last decade or so about the death penalty, and it's really interesting. You have liberals who want to end the death penalty for a variety of reasons. It's cruel, it's inhumane, it's unfairly applied. Sometimes people are actually innocent and it's only discovered after they've been executed, which is really annoying. And then you have the conservatives who have come over to the anti-death penalty side, but their motivation is the death penalty is inefficient. It's expensive. People sit on death row for 20, 30 years. It's really much, much cheaper to put someone in prison for life than it is to kill them and go through all the legal and logistical problems of killing them. So you have these two sides coming together increasingly against the death penalty, the liberal side, the conservative side, each has their own reasons. Now, there is something I learned as a salesman. When you've made the sale, shut up. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, if there is a policy that you want, whether it's energy or death sentence or something else, if you want renewable energy, when you've made the sale, it doesn't matter if they agree with you for reasons with which you disagree. You don't have to agree for the same reasons as long as you have agreement. And I think a lot of conservatives and liberals could benefit from thinking about this. You don't have to agree on why you agree, as long as you agree. In a sense, that's sort of what compromise is about, is making the case to both sides in language and concepts that they can understand, that they can intuit. So the energy changes that we're seeing, you want a 100% renewable energy economy, you've got to have a storage economy. Is that going to be a perfect world? Well, you still have to mine for the minerals and you still have to refine the elements and there will be pollution and there will be a carbon footprint. The question is, it's always a matter of which is worse, which is better. A lot of the materials involved, for example, in energy storage are recyclable. So even after a battery gets tired, you can reclaim the materials in the battery and reprocess them, which will involve some pollution. So there's this trade-off. You're talking about carbon dioxide and methane and greenhouse effect versus other forms of pollution that perhaps can be mitigated against, or perhaps some of the waste products can actually be turned into things of economic value. That happens. So I thought this was a really, really interesting story, and it's the reason I bring it up. You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You can help support Think Wing Radio and KPFT. We're a community-supported station. I'm a volunteer doing a show, which I am grateful for the opportunity to do. KPFT is a 501c3 tax-exempt organization, so your contribution is fully tax-deductible. You can go to kpft.org and click on the donate jar. You can call right now, 713-526-5738, and someone will take your phone call and help you make that contribution. You can also text to 713-526-5738 and include give in the text, and you'll then get an automated response that will talk to you about what is how much you want to give and whether you want to put it on a credit card or whatever. You know, KPFT's website lets you listen to KPFT's live stream along with on-demand content in the archive. These digital services are free for you, but they cost KPFT money each year. For all those times you've gone to kpft.org or opened the Pacifica app or shared a reporter's story on Facebook, consider making a donation. Consider what you get out of KPFT. The satisfaction, the information, the enjoyment, the pleasure, the news. Consider what you gain from KPFT, but we don't have advertising, so we don't earn money that way. So perhaps you can find it in your heart to say, well, you know, maybe in the course of several months, maybe I've gotten $50 worth of value out of my enjoyment of KPFT or things I've learned or discussions I've been able to have with live talk radio, which I mostly do on my show, just not today. And think about what KPFT has done for you, and maybe you can donate, I don't know, $5 or $10 a month, make it a monthly donation, costs about as much as a latte. You'll never notice it, but it makes a big difference to us. So consider making that call, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. You can text to that number as well, 713-526-5738, and then include the word give in the text. And that will enable you to donate over the phone. Okay, this was an interesting article. I was in photo processing for about 6 or 7 years, and it was something of a hobby of mine, photography, for quite a while. So I found this really interesting. This is an article in the New York Times from April 25th, The Racial Bias Built into Photography. I do have this on the link, or it will be on the link for today's show, thinkwingradio.com, or, of course, just to say, you can also follow me at thinkwingradio on Twitter and Facebook page, thinkwingradio. But the shows, I always post a blog post that has the links to the articles on which I base most of the things I talk about, and often the things I never get to. And this was really interesting. It's called The Racial Basis Built into Photography. Sarah Lewis explores the relationship between racism and the camera. So here's how it kind of starts. Can a photographic lens condition racial behavior? Sarah Lewis's work looks at how the right to be recognized justly in a democracy has been tied to the impact of images and representation in the public realm. It examines how the construction of public pictures limits and enlarges our notion of who counts in America. And I know this from technical experience. It can be hard, technically, for light brown skin to be photographed against light colors. Yet instead of seeking a solution, technicians try to work around the body and the clothing and talk about whether what they're wearing is suitable for their skin tone. Light skin is typically categorized as the norm, and other skin tones as needing special corrective care. Photography has altered how we interact with each other without us realizing it. Photography is not just a system of calibrating light, but a technology of subjective decisions. Light skin became literally the chemical baseline for film technology, fulfilling the needs of its dominant target audience. For example, developing color film technology initially required what was called a Shirley card. And if you go to my website and click on the link, we have the images. When you sent off your film to get developed, lab technicians would use the image of a white woman with brown hair named Shirley as the measuring stick against which they calibrated the colors. Quality control meant ensuring that Shirley's face looked good. It has translated into the color balancing of digital technology. In the mid-1990s, Kodak created a multiracial Shirley card with three women, one black, one white, and one Asian, and later included a Latina model in an attempt to intend to help camera operators calibrate skin tones. These were not adopted by everyone since they coincided with the rise of digital photography. Now, just as an aside, when you had photo labs, you had standardization. chemical standardization, light standardization, exposure standardization. It was standardized. You had to have guidelines. Apparently, it took complaints from corporate furniture and chocolate manufacturers in the 1960s and 70s for Kodak to start to fix color photography's bias. Earl Cage, who was Kodak's former manager of research and the head of Color Photo Studios, received complaints from chocolate companies saying that they, quote, weren't getting the right brown tones on the chocolates in the photographs. Furniture companies also were not getting enough variation between the different color woods in their advertisement. Concordia University professor Lorna Roth's research shows that Cage of Kodak had also received complaints before from parents about the quality of graduation photographs, namely the color contrast made it nearly impossible to capture a diverse group. You may have noticed this in your own photos. But it was the chocolate and furniture companies that forced Kodak's hand. Cage admitted, quote, it was never black flesh that was addressed as a serious problem at the time. I mean, that's a fascinating story. The interplay between technology and society, and as the needs of society or the demands of society change, the technology, which is thought to be fine, learns that it has to evolve to satisfy a particular need. Now, did they do the right thing for the wrong reason? Did they adapt to a wider variety of skin tones because chocolate and furniture manufacturers were complaining about their problem with photography? Well, that brings us back to, you don't always have to do the right thing for the right reason, and when you've won the argument, stop selling. So, but I thought that was a fascinating story. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We're doing what we like to call a spring fun drive. It's a fund drive, but if you de-emphasize that D, it's a fun drive. We're having fun. You can help support your community-supported radio station that survives almost entirely on gifts from you by calling 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Someone will take your call. They will ask you your name, your address, your email, if you want to put it on a credit card or a debit card, or if you would like to make your pledge now and send in a check later, or by remote chance, if you'd like to make a pledge now and perhaps drop it by the station later. That happens. You can also text to 713-526-5738. And in the body of the text, type the word give, and an automated system will help you with your contribution, which is tax deductible. We're a 501c3 organization. I'll also point out that you can go to supermarkets like Kroger's and Randall's, and you can get your customer barcode card so that every time you make a purchase, without charging you anything extra, a little extra goes to Pacifica. You can also go to smile.amazon.com, and every purchase you make, a small percentage goes to Pacifica and KPFT. So there are many ways to support the station, whether it's making a direct donation, which is frankly the most helpful, or whether you do these small support things by shopping in the right way at certain places, or, you know, texting, or going to kpft.org and clicking on donate, or making a monthly donation, maybe something on the order of $5 or $10 a month, which for us makes it a predictable cash flow that maybe results in shorter fund drives. A lot of different ways to support the station. I also might like to add occasionally, we're doing a fund drive, so obviously we're asking you for money. But if this is not the time that you can give, tell your friends about the station. Tell your friends about shows that you like. And help us grow support for the station, which will also help us with fundraising. So you can help us that way. I'll also point out that many, if not most, of the shows on KPFT can be listened to by podcast now. So you can go to archive.kpft.org, and you can choose certain shows. Think Wing Radio, I believe, is one of them that you can actually download as podcasts, which I think is pretty cool. Okay, so getting back to some other stuff. I have to go down my notes here. Sorry. Okay. One of the questions that there was an article, why worthless humanities degrees may set you up for life. Now, this is something I've argued for some time, that, in fact, a liberal arts education is in many ways better preparation for life than learning a specialty. I've heard for many, many years, and now that I'm older, I understand perfectly well, that most people will have at least three careers during their lives. Further, I have learned as I've grown older, there comes a point where you sort of outgrow the workforce, outage the workforce. And it's not necessarily always about age, age discrimination technically being illegal, of course, but frankly, it's about the world changes. You know, by the time I was about 55, I was realizing that my stepdaughter was doing stuff that I couldn't even begin to wrap my head around. You know the old saying that it's so easy a child can do it? Well, we have children because they're the only ones that can do this stuff. My stepdaughter right now is making a very good living doing stuff that I can't even wrap my head around. Now, I'm 68, so that's already a larger age difference than most people toward the end of their workforce lives. But I saw the handwriting on the wall when I was about 50. It's not just a matter of younger people are willing to work for less, which is usually true. It's also a matter of they know how to do things I don't, and they're willing to work for less. You know, retraining only takes you so far, and yet we need to find ways of using older people who have a different skill set from young people. So getting back to the story, it starts off that today a degree is all but a necessity for the job market, one that more than halves your chances of being unemployed. In other words, it doubles your chances of getting a job. Still, that alone is no guarantee of a job, and yet we're paying more and more for a college degree. In the U.S., room and board and tuition at a private university, and something like Harvard, for example, is a private university, nonprofit but private, costs an average of $48,510 a year. In the U.S., for example, a bachelor's degree holder earns $461 more each week than someone who never attended a university. Our assumptions about the market value of certain degrees and the worthlessness of others, however, might be off. At best, that could be making some students unnecessarily stressed. At worst, pushing people onto paths that set them up for less fulfilling lives. It also perpetuates the stereotype of liberal arts graduates in particular as an elite caste, something that can discourage underprivileged students and anyone else who needs an immediate return on their university investment. A little later in the article, it says, when George Anders was a technology reporter for Forbes from 2012 to 2016, he says Silicon Valley, quote, was consumed with this idea that there was no education but STEM, which is to say science, technology, engineering, and math. But when he talked to hiring managers at the biggest tech companies, he found a different reality. Uber was picking up psychology majors to deal with unhappy riders and drivers. OpenTable was hiring English majors to bring data to restaurateurs to get them excited about what data could do for their restaurants. He says, I realized that the ability to communicate and get along with people and understand what's on other people's minds and do full-strength critical thinking, all these things were valued and appreciated by everyone as important job skills, except the media. This realization led him to write his appropriately titled book, You Can Do Anything, The Surprising Power of a Useless Liberal Arts Education. Now, I'm going to just step aside here. One of the arguments that I have made, and mind you, I'm not dissing specialists. We need specialists in the mix. But I think something to be said for a liberal arts education is the general knowledge that you obtain. It's a form of civilization's institutional knowledge. It makes you, I think, more flexible for ongoing learning as you live your life, as things change. I think that having touchstone ideas and concepts from a broad variety of disciplines, I think helps to prepare you for the evolution you will need to make as you get older and as the job market changes, even within your area of expertise. I'm not even going to call it a specialty, but, you know, we all tend to fall into areas of expertise. I think specialists, you know, it's like the difference when you're talking evolution, animal evolution. The specialists have a higher likelihood of becoming extinct. The generalists tend to be more adaptive in terms of the things they can eat, the climates they can live in, the environments they can make a home in. So that's kind of on an evolutionary scale. You know, humans are not immune from these things. And on an evolutionary scale, adaptability matters. On a professional scale, adaptability matters. My stepdaughter, who is doing very well for herself, she's not an engineer. She's not a mathematician. She happens to be a very bright, artistically talented girl who majored, I think she minored in psychology and majored in political science. And she's in a totally commercial kind of line of work. But she's able to synthesize these varied experiences along with her particular set of skills and talents into a good career. So getting back to the story, LinkedIn's research on the most sought-after job skills by employers for 2019 found that the three most wanted soft skills were creativity, persuasion, and collaboration. In other words, playing well with others. Well, one of the top five hard skills was people management. A full 56% of UK employers surveyed said their staff lacked essential teamwork skills, and 46% thought it was a problem that their employees struggled with handling feelings, whether theirs or someone else's. It's not just UK employers. One 2017 study found that the fastest growing jobs in the US in the last 30 years have almost all specifically required a high level of social skills. I remember when my stepdaughter was in college and thinking about majoring in psychology, and one of the questions she asked was, but what can I do with something like that unless I become a psychologist or a psychiatrist? And I said, you can do anything with it. Psychology is about people. You can use it for management. You can use it for sales. You can use it for acting. You can use, I mean, think about it. Anything that involves interacting with people is a psychology exercise. So on the one hand, people go, well, what are you going to do with that? Well, on the other hand, the answer is anything, anything. So it's a broad-based sort of skill. You're learning about how people react in different situations. I mean, I saw some of the essays that she was given to write papers on or response on. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. Not necessarily deep, just thought-provoking. Really takes your mind out of the box. So getting back to this story, and I suppose I should say at this point, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM, and we are in fundraising mode. So do please call 713-526-5738. There's an $850 goal for this hour. So, man, I could sure use your help. 713-526-5738. And you can also go to kpft.org. Aside from all the interesting information on there about personalities and events and programming, you can also click on the donate link and you can kick in a few bucks. You can use a credit card or a debit card. And we like large donations, but if all you can afford is a few bucks, that helps too. All we ask as a community-supported radio station is whatever support the community can afford to give us in order to stay on the air and keep doing what we do. You know, a lot of us are volunteers. We work for free. Not everybody at the station works for free, but mostly we do. And the station still isn't free. You know, there's electricity and natural gas and equipment and structure, the building. things like simple things like chairs and pens and paper clips, occasional painting. We had to replace the air conditioner several years ago. And of course, you know, that's not a small thing. So even free radio with lots of volunteers requires an investment. We are, in a sense, investing in the community with what we do. We're sort of a speculation radio station. We're speculating that if we give you the radio, you will come and maybe, you know, pay a few bucks. So do what you can. 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. You can text to that number as well. Put give in the body of the text, and you will then get into an automated give and take, which will enable you to donate what you wish to donate in the manner in which you wish to donate it. Okay, going back to the article, which I said about 5 minutes ago but lied, it goes without saying you can be an excellent communicator and critical thinker without a liberal arts degree. And any good university education, not just one in English or psychology, should sharpen these abilities further. Any degree will give you very important generic skills like being able to write, being able to present an argument, research, problem solve, teamwork, becoming familiar with technology, says Dublin-based educational consultant Anne Mangan. But few courses of study are quite as heavy on reading, writing, speaking, and critical thinking as the liberal arts, in particular the humanities, whether that's by debating other students in a seminar, writing a thesis paper, or analyzing poetry. Quote, empathy is usually the biggest skill. That doesn't just mean feeling sorry for people with problems. It means an ability to understand the needs and wants of a diverse group, says George Anders. Humanities graduates go on to a variety of fields. The biggest group of U.S. humanities graduates, 15%, go into management. That's followed by 14% in office and admin positions, 13% in sales, another 12% in education, mostly teaching, another 10% are in business and finance. Glassdoor's 2019 research found that 8 of the top 10 best jobs in the UK were managerial positions, people-oriented roles that require communication skills and emotional intelligence. As a matter of fact, it defined best by combining earning potential, overall job satisfaction rating, and number of job openings. And many of them were outside STEM-based industries. The third best job was marketing manager. Fourth, production manager. Fifth, sales manager. An engineering role doesn't appear on the list until 18th, below positions in communications, HR, and project management. And again, I'm not dissing the technical specialties, and the article isn't either. We all contribute to the overall benefit of society in some way. We need engineers, and we need mathematicians, and we need people who know construction, and we need people who are truck drivers. All of these things are essential skills in a civilization ecosystem. But when you're not sure what you want to do with your life, if you haven't grown up saying, I want to design buildings, I want to be a doctor, I want to be an accountant, you know, I want to be whatever it is you want to be, an actor. Unless you have grown up with a conviction, and some people do, of what you want to do, there are far worse fates than getting a general education liberal arts degree. Especially for people who are not sure of what they want to do, you're not hurting yourself in the long run by getting a liberal arts degree. In fact, it might be the best thing you can do because it opens you up to a plethora of additional opportunities and experiences. I'll tell you, I think one of the funniest things that ever happened to me in high school, I was getting a regular academic degree, and one of the required courses was chemistry. I was a fair to middling student in chemistry. I think I was a C student in chemistry. It's not so much I couldn't learn, I was just lazy, or inattentive, I might say. And yet,
I never thought I'd use that again in my life. Most people that take chemistry as part of their required courses figure they'll not only never use it again, you'll hear many kids say, I hope I forget it as soon as possible. Well, oddly enough, about 4 years later, I was interviewing for a job in photographic processing and management. And they asked me if I took any chemistry. Did I know how to use any chemical equipment? Did I know how to use a stirrer or a pipette? Or did I know the table of elements? Not for deep, I mean, it's not like I was doing chemical research. I just wanted to know if I could function in a lab environment. And you know what? My high school level chemistry got me that job. Just the fact that I remembered enough of that chemistry and I had learned enough of that chemistry, I got a job. Who knew? So, you know, when you're talking about, liberal arts, it's a useless degree. You're not learning anything in particular. You're just learning stuff. But when you're not quite sure what your career path is going to be, or even if you are sure and 10 or 15 years later, the world changes and you end up having to do something else, or maybe your life does, a liberal arts education, not a bad thing. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We are doing a fundraiser. It's our spring fund drive, or fun drive as we sometimes like to push it together. Fun drive. We have a goal of $850 this hour. So whatever you guys can afford, do please pledge. You can call 713-526-5738. Somebody will be happy to take your call, 713-526-5738. They'll discuss with you what the amount of your pledge is and take information like your name, your address, your email, your phone number. If you want to pay by credit card or debit card, they'll ask you if you're interested in any of our thank you gifts and tell you what contribution levels will earn what kinds of gifts. And it can be anything from a mug or a shirt to tickets to live events, venues. A lot of possibilities. I think we have like a whole archive of programming from KPFT and Pacifica going back like 50 years. We have digital recordings of that stuff. So lots of different possibilities. You can make a one-time donation. You can make a monthly donation, small, medium, or large, that'll just get automatically billed to you every month. Or just make a one-time shot. Whatever you can do, we appreciate. 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. You can also text to that number and just put the word give in the body of the text, or you can go to kpft.org and click on donate. So going back to, again, the benefits of a liberal arts education, I want to make sure I'm not rereading something I already read. Okay, Glassdoor is a relatively new company. 2019 research from them found that 8 of the top 10 best jobs in the UK were managerial positions, people-oriented roles that require communication skills and emotional intelligence. I think maybe I've already read that. Let's see. Here we go. One recent study of 1,700 people from 30 countries, meanwhile, found that the majority of those in leadership positions had either a social sciences or humanities degree. That was especially true for leaders under 45 years of age. Leaders over 45 were more likely to have studied STEM. This isn't to say that a liberal arts degree is the easy road. A lot of people, according to Anders, a lot of people I talked to, were 5 or 10 years into their career, and there was a sense that the first year was bumpy and it took a while to find their footing, but as things played out, it did tend to work. For some graduates, the initial challenge was not knowing what they wanted to do with their lives, a common problem, I will add. For others, it was not having acquired as many technical skills with their degree as, say, their IT peers and having to play catch-up. But I think one of the things that the article points out, and I am a firm believer in this, a lot of young people, you know, just because I'm old, they'll get around to asking me, you know, my parents say I should be a medical, go into medical school, or my parents say I shouldn't go into acting, or I shouldn't go into music, or I shouldn't go into art, you know, or I shouldn't go into media, you know, radio or television, because it's so hard to succeed in those things. And, you know, one of the things specifically suggested in this article is do what you love. Now, I'll tell you what the article says, and then I'll add to it. This is a big part of why there is one major takeaway. Whatever a student pursues in university, it must be something they aren't good at, but really enjoy. In most areas, the employer just wants to know you've been to college and you've done well. That's why I think, he says, doing something that really interests you is essential, because that's when you are going to do well. No matter what, making a degree or career path decision based on average salaries isn't a good move. Financial success is not a good reason. It tends to be a very poor reason. Be successful at something and money will follow, as opposed to the other way around. Focus on doing the stuff that you love, and you'll be so enthusiastic about it that people will want to give you a job, and then go and develop within that job. When I am asked by young people what they should do, you know, parents say this, they want to do that. Now, I'm not saying that this is absolutely the best answer or the best solution. This is just my opinion. But what I tell young people is, at least for the first few years after you leave school, find something you love and do it. I think one of the most profound conversations I had with my stepdaughter, who really had very, very strong artistic inclinations, she was going to an Ivy school, surrounded by all these people, all these young people that were highly accomplished. I mean, we're talking the creme de la creme. Everyone rejected from that school deserved to go to that school. They just only had so many openings. So you're talking about a really highly competitive environment. And in her junior year, she started to have a little bit of a meltdown. She had to start making decisions about her majors. She had to start making decisions about the things she was going to specialize in. She had to start giving serious thought to the career she was, or careers that she was aiming toward. And we had a conversation once, and she said, you know, I have these young people around me. They've always known what they wanted to do. They're always so good at what they want to do. I don't know what I want to do. I'm interested in so many things. And I told her, having known her at this point for 8 years, met her when she was 10 or 11. And I said to her, you already know what you want to do, which I meant art. You know what you want to do. The question you have to address is, how are you going to make a living at it? And I actually think that that had an impact on her, because that's essentially how she ended up going with her life. She found a way to use her art as entree, and her general creativity as entree into a very rewarding career that she loves. So, yeah, I'm a believer. Follow what you love. Your job is to try to find a way to make a living. You don't have to be a superstar, maybe, but you need to find a way to make a living doing what you love. That's the goal. You may not know right away what you love, which is one of the benefits of a liberal arts education, but when you find that thing that you love, the goal for you is to find a way to make a living at it, and then you'll be happy as a human can be, because we always find ways of screwing stuff up. So, I've got a few minutes here, so let me do a little pitch for you. We are a community-based radio station, and we rely on you to stay on the air. KPFT's website lets you listen to our live stream, along with the on-demand content and podcasts, and these digital services, while free for you, cost KPFT more money each year. For all those times you've gone to kpft.org or opened the Pacifica app on your phone or shared a reporter's story on Facebook, consider making a small donation. Just click the donate button on kpft.org or call or text 713-526-5738. And if you text, just write GIVE. You know, you don't listen to KPFT or Think Wing Radio to have your opinions confirmed. You turn to KPFT and Think Wing Radio for thought-provoking conversations from people on all sides of the issues. And actually, I pride my show on that. Plenty of other media outlets give you a partisan echo chamber, but we don't. We're not afraid of complicated issues. We're not afraid of strong opinions or heated debates. In fact, I jump into those conversations because that's how we all learn. You know, I'm a very opinionated guy. I know what I know. I know what I don't know. I know what I'm uncertain of. And then there's stuff that I just have opinions on. But I learn from you guys. And I hope sometimes you learn from me. And sometimes it's not even a matter of learning. It's just a matter of trying to think of things and maybe seeing them from new directions, new perspectives, new lights. And you guys do that when I talk to you. And I hope I do that a little bit when you listen or talk to me. So the show needs your support. The station needs your support. The conversations that happen here happen thanks to the financial support of our listeners. So contribute to support our community radio station. We don't shy away from difficult topics or differing opinions. And we hope we have earned your support for that reason. Text 713-526-5738. You don't even have to talk to us. You don't even have to interact with us. Just text 713-526-5738. Type GIVE in the body and send it, and you'll get an interactive response. Or go to kpft.org and hit the donate link and contribute what you can there, hopefully not only for KPFT, but for Think Wing Radio, because an $850 goal, man, this is no joke. So in sum, you turn to Think Wing Radio and KPFT for thought-provoking conversations from people on all sides of the issues. KPFT and Think Wing Radio, not a partisan echo chamber. KPFT hosts and reporters are not afraid of complicated issues or strong opinions or heated debates. And these conversations happen on KPFT thanks to the financial support of our listeners. You. You. We need you. And hopefully you need and want us. You see, it's a perfect symbiotic relationship. We just need money. 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738, kpft.org. For my own humble self-promotion, do remember I have a website, and my website has blog posts for every show with links and recording. I have my own archives because the archives at KPFT stay live for 60 days. I have stuff going back to 2010. So you can go to my website, thinkwingradio.com, for blog posts, opinion pieces, occasional articles. You can also follow me on Twitter, at thinkwingradio, or you can go to Facebook, which is creatively, I have a page called Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig. So we're getting close to the end of the hour. I do appreciate those of you who are listening, who have listened. I appreciate those of you who have donated. I appreciate those of you who may yet donate, who are thinking about it. Within the next couple of minutes would be good, because then it'll go toward Think Wing Radio, but you know, it all goes into the same pot at the end of the day. 713-526-5738. Someone will take your call. Text 713-5738. I'm sorry, 713-526-5738. And type GIVE in the body of the text and send, or go to kpft.org and just click on the donate link. And there's also a lot of other stuff on that page that you might find interesting as well. Okay, this has been Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I will be back next Monday. I hope to be live. One never knows. We're not guaranteed another day, but I do hope to be live next week. And I'll look forward to talking to you folks. All of you have a great week ahead, and I'll look forward to seeing you again. Bye-bye.
KPFT's Community Advisory Board, also known as the CAB, is proud to announce the first town hall meeting for 2019 for listeners, programmers, and staff entitled Finding the Unity in Community Radio on Saturday, May 18th, 2019 at 9 a.m. on the Montrose Center, 409 Brainerd Street, Houston, Texas, 77006. The CAB is made up of representatives